From the studios of WEKU on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University, it's time for Eastern Standard. Hello, I'm John Hingsbergen. Well, it was a year of many changes. American teenagers and their parents got their first look at the Beatles. Our culture was evolving in many ways beyond the revolution in music. And only 6 months earlier, Dr. Martin Luther had given his famous I Have a Dream speech in front of the Lincoln Memorial to a crowd of over 250,000. Move forward in time, it's now 2014 and nearly 50 years since masses of protesters marched on the Kentucky Capitol in Frankfort. On today's Eastern Standard, we're talking about that march, the fight to end segregation in Kentucky, and the progress that we've seen in the half century following the march, and where that fight for civil rights is heading for this generation and beyond. We invite you to get on board. Were you there 50 years ago in Frankfort? Did you participate in a similar protest, the march, or sit-in during the turbulent fight for civil rights? Whether you were a victim of discrimination or if you have a story of the positive progress you've seen, we want to hear it. And of course, you know, those who did not live through it and who are beneficiaries of the efforts of that era, absolutely invited to be part of our program today. Give us a call at, and we'll go ahead and open the phone line, 800-621-8890, or send us an email to wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Send us a tweet, if you like, at WEKUEST, or post on the WEKU Facebook page. We'll keep an eye on that. We have two guests with us in the studio now, and another planning to be with us a little bit later in the program. But first off, we want to introduce Dr. Sandra Moore. Sandra is Associate Provost for Diversity Planning with Eastern Kentucky University. She's been here with the university since 1988. She's been Director of Minority Affairs, worked in the Student Development Office, was it? And is also a member of the Kentucky Commission on Human Rights. She's been on that board since 2013, since last year. Sandra Moore, thank you so much for being with us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us is Jim Embry. Jim has been fighting for civil rights since a very young age. He was involved in protests as early as age 10.
Yes, sir.
And in 1964, as NAACP state youth chairman, he was involved rallying participants in the march on Frankfort. Coincidentally, tonight he'll be presenting a documentary, 8 Acres of Equality, chronicling the efforts of a group of Lexingtonians to restore one of the city's historic African-American cemeteries. And we'll hear a little bit about that later in the program. But that showing will be tonight at 6 o'clock at the Madison County Library in Berea, if you're not still tuned in when we talk about that. Jim Embry, thanks for being with us.
Great to be here, John.
Let's start with you, Jim. You were there in 1964 in Frankfort. Tell us all about it, what you experienced.
Well, again, as you had mentioned, I was the state youth chairman for the NAACP. In 1964, I was mentored by Furman Knox, who was, of course, in the Kentucky chairman of the adult branch of NAACP. And we went around, we had a leadership conference in February of that year, and part of the conference was that we were encouraging the various state chapters around Kentucky to send individuals, send chapter leaders and young people and community folk to Frankfort to join in on this very historic march.
When was that march first planned or envisioned? Was it a follow-up to the March on Washington?
Well, I think to some degree, certainly. But as I understand the history of the organizing it, they began organizing it probably back in the fall of 63, and the group of allied organizations for civil rights began organizing the leadership team, the organizing team to get various organizations and people to be there in Frankfort, and worked, of course, with the government at the time, Governor Breathitt, to make sure that there were security and other kind of logistics were in place for thousands of people to come to Frankfort to address the question then of primarily of public accommodations. We were trying to get the folks in Frankfort to pass a bill, if you will, integrating or desegregating public accommodations. So I was living at that time, I was born in Richmond, but lived at that time in Covington. And so we were organizing a bunch of our folk to come to Frankfort that day. And we had buses leaving from the Lincoln Grant School, and there were maybe 30 or 40, as I remember, folks from Northern Kentucky. We had spent time days before making signs, showing our support for Northern Kentucky for the March on Frankfurt.
And your role was organizing youth, bringing in young
people.
Well, were they high school students, college students?
Mostly high school students. But again, as a state youth chairman, we were always in the efforts of organizing youth to join NAACP throughout the state, whether it was in Harlan, Kentucky, or Bowling Green, Owensboro, Louisville, Richmond, wherever. So this was just part of an ongoing effort of organizing young people to be agents of change.
How diverse was that group of youth interested in supporting civil rights at that time in Kentucky? Were there white young people involved?
Oh, certainly. Certainly within our organization. But there were also a number of students that came, as I recall, to the march from Berea College. Even the governor's daughter was involved in the march. So the march was a diverse march, predominantly African American, but certainly diverse in a wide variety of ways. Adults, young people, ministers, activists, publishers of newspapers, quite a diverse audience. And that day, as I recall, when we arrived in Frankfurt, I believe our bus parked up near the KSU campus and kind of like walked down the hill towards the primary gathering place. But because Furman Knox, again, who was the state chairman for NAACP, had been one of the organizers of that march, then we were kind of given a place that wasn't very far from the very front of the march contingent. As I recall, the day it was in March, and it was a cold day, and it had either been snowing earlier. It was a cold rain.
Surprise, surprise! March in Frankfurt, huh?
Yes, but the enthusiasm, the excitement, the determination of the marchers warmed up, if you will, the day. There was music along the way. People were singing, of course, as well. And along Capitol Avenue, as I recall, many homeowners or shop owners were very polite, very kind, very supportive of offering the marchers, water or whatever to show their support, if you will, for this great march.
I want to come back to you. Keep us on track.
Absolutely.
In terms of the scene and the attitude and the just the overall feel of that march in 1964. Jim Embry here with us, organized the youth, working with the NAACP as a state youth chairman. Also with us, Sandra Moore here at Eastern Kentucky University. Sandra, you're a native of Kentucky?
I'm a native of West Virginia. That's my home state.
So not far away, this region in general, Eastern Kentucky and so forth. Talk about your experiences as a young person. You were not old enough to participate in the march, but certainly experienced the South, as we certainly would call this region, during the days of segregation and, I guess, Jim Crow. Mm-hmm.
Which is true. I didn't participate in the March on Frankfort because my home state, I was in West Virginia then, Mingo County to be specific. And from that perspective, my mother was a member of the NAACP and held a leadership office. And so the march took place in Williamson, West Virginia then. And so at the age of six, I participated, I marched, and it was an interesting experience because being in the state of West Virginia, when you saw the marches that were taking place in what I call the Deep South, which would be states far, further south from West Virginia, you saw the flavor, you saw what was taking place and the issues and concerns that were there. So as we marched through West Virginia, and as a young child, my thoughts were concerns and fear factor about the dogs and the police officers and some of the other things that you would see during those days.
Was that an issue?
That was not an issue.
Good.
In Mingo County and Williamson, West Virginia was specifically where we marched. And so it was a smaller kind of community, and I would say the state of West Virginia, even though being a southern state per se, didn't have the same issues that were taking place further south, but still experienced discrimination and segregation.
Did you ever get a sense of my, I just learned about some of the history of West Virginia in the last few years, that West Virginia's very history as having split off from Virginia related to the Civil War, did that impact race relations from your understanding?
It really did, because even as a child growing up, you would think about the history of the state of West Virginia, and you would talk about the southern states it, where this were south of the Mason-Dixon line, which is part of the formation of the state that's up closer to the Pennsylvania area. But within the state, there wasn't as much, I want to say there wasn't the type of plantation estates and things of that nature. So it was a different take in West Virginia when you talk about the Civil War and the Civil Rights era and those types of things.
The march in Frankfort is our topic on this week's Eastern Standard, and we certainly want to hear from our listeners in this region of Kentucky or wherever, and tell us about where you were actually during that era when you call into 800-621-8890. Sandra Moore with the Diversity Affairs Officer, would we call, is that the title?
University Diversity Office.
And Sandra here with us on this week's program. Sandra, what have you seen in terms of progress? And in the minute or so we have before a station break, are you happy with the way things have moved in these last number of years?
Happy with the movement, but then also knowing that there's still major rooms for improvement. When you talk about Kentucky, Kentucky is perceived as the front door to the south and the back door to the north. And I think with that kind of conceptual or theoretical approach, there are still areas for improvement, even though improvement has been made, significant improvement since the 1964.
And Eastern Kentucky University is involved, and you actually yourself are involved in planning for this year's commemorative march?
Very much so. Eastern is a participating organization. We are also taking marchers from the university and the community, and we'll leave out, scheduled to leave at 8 a.m. on the morning of the march, and then we'll be actively participating. Our president is leading us in the march and is strongly encouraging the entire university community to come out and participate with us, President Michael Benson.
Is the university's transportation and so forth open to the wider community of Richmond, Madison County?
Or well, we're really kind of centering on it for EKU students, faculty, and staff, you mm-hmm. know, for obvious reasons. And then with that, we have a large group of people who are caravanning with us.
I'll bet that if folks in Madison County wanted to know more about the march, your office would be able to help them out with that.
Definitely.
We'll pass along that contact information in a little while during today's Eastern Standard. Phone lines open. The March on Frankfort in 1964. We're interested in your stories, your questions, your comments. 800-621-8890. Email wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Group Peter, Paul, and Mary were very much involved in the march in Frankfort on March 5th, 1964, as well as the March on Washington in August the previous year. We're talking the March on Frankfort. We're talking about the 50th anniversary, March 5th, and the commemorative march occurring in Kentucky's state capital this coming week. We're interested in your stories. If you were there at that march in 1964, if you're planning to be there next Wednesday the 5th, or if you have other stories you'd like to tell about your experience of segregation, changes in race relations and civil rights in Kentucky or wherever you happen to be at that time, questions you may have for our guests, and we will pass them along. Sandra Moore with us right now, Jim Embry. And Jim, you were organizing youth for the 1964 march. I'm interested in, you know, how did you feel about Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Peter, Paul, and Mary, what's the baseball player's name again?
Jackie Robinson.
The one and only Jackie Robinson. I mean, famous people there to support Kentucky and its right and its movement for civil rights.
Well, you know, we were thrilled to be there, first of all, as young people. But I had been involved. My mother was the president of CORE back in 1959, and I was 10 years old at the
Congress
time.
Congress on Racial Equality?
Congress on Racial Equality, okay. Yeah. And so I had been on, you know, been in sit-ins, marches, demonstrations, wait-ins for several years before the march. I had met people like James Farmer and many other civil rights leaders. So while it was thrilling to be there under President Dr. King and Ralph Abernathy and Jackie Robinson, as a young person, I wasn't, it was like, you know, just being there among people who were all civil rights activists. We had a chance once the march came to its stop in front of the Capitol, and these speeches had been made by a variety of people, including Dr. King, Jackie Robinson, and so forth. We had a chance to very briefly, to meet those individuals and shake their hands. And yes, it was thrilling, and to know that you were in the presence of history makers and individuals who had been inspiring an entire nation to look deeply at its consciousness and its role as a world's leader in the question of race relations.
We did have an email from John of Berea, who wrote addressing the question regarding the ambiance at the 1964 march. And actually, we'll pass this along to our next guest as well and get her answers to this question about what is intended in terms of the feel for this year's march. Although your comments, Jim Embry, and we'll get Sandra Moore as well. What do you hope to accomplish at this march next Wednesday?
From that perspective, what we're hoping to do is to heighten the awareness for the accomplishments that have taken place over the last 50 years, and then also how that improvement needs to be made for the next 50 years, and also to help with the understanding that it's a role that we all have to play in this opportunity as we continue to march for civil rights and civil liberty and inclusiveness. And with the active participation, many of the students, faculty, and staff, in fact, that'll be participating have not had the opportunity to march for civil rights before. And so it's going to be a teachable moment for all as to how we can work collectively.
Do you get a sense from the students that they're excited about it? And in general, I mean, if it weren't the, you know, last summer with the anniversary of the March on Washington, this spring the March on Frankfurt, are students in general at Eastern Kentucky University or in college in general today interested about that history, and do they, you know, have an excitement for what occurred then?
They have an excitement because it's an opportunity for them to participate in what we call living history. They have an opportunity to make their mark by actively participating. They have an opportunity to do what their grandfathers, grandmothers, mothers, fathers did before them. And so there is a level of excitement. And I think that in working with the students, you know, you feel the enthusiasm generating and, you know, the excitedness that's taken place as well, too, to actually be able to march and to march down the same avenue that Dr. King did, Reverend Ralph Abernathy, and all the others that were there historically 50 years ago. And so that excitement definitely is there.
And even though they can't have been there in 64, they can say they were there in 2014 or 2013, pass it along to the generation that's going to observe the 100th anniversary of all of these things.
Very much so.
Jim Embry?
Yes, I would just add that as we talk about the coming march to commemorate the march 50 years ago, to be keenly aware that Dr. King and people like him were addressing the current issues of the day. And a problem that I have with our attempts to commemorate is that we don't, as Dr. King did, think about how to use the march to address some of the current issues I think Dr. King would be addressing.
For instance?
Oh, issues like extreme income inequality, okay, that has worsened in the last 50 years. Questions of war that Dr. King was addressing, especially in 68, are still before us. Why do we still think we need to go to war, now two wars? Questions of climate change and environmental degradation are issues that I'm sure that Dr. King would be addressing today. And the questions that Michelle Obama has been so righteously addressing the last 4 years, this question of the nation's health. Health of the children, health of the people, questions of heart disease, obesity, are the kind of issues that I think should be on the placards on March 5th, not just questions of, say, racial inequality, which are still with us, but these other very pressing and profoundly important issues.
In March of 1964, was the legislature in session during the march?
Yes, they sure were.
Was that a coincidence?
Absolutely. The march, according to this planning, was planned as a way to apply pressure on folks in Frankfort, both the governor and other elected officials, to pass this public accommodations law and to even pass a much larger civil rights law here in Kentucky.
Any sense of the mood in terms of today's General Assembly and today's Governor Beshear in terms of their support for the commemorative march?
Oh, they're certainly supportive in all kinds of ways. And I hope that many of us who will be there will go into the halls of the Capitol, as was done 50 years ago, and talk to elected officials and get them to be even more vigilant around some of these issues I've just talked about.
Were you involved in the meeting? Did you participate or observe the meeting with Governor Breathitt at the time?
No.
How do you feel about that? I mean, I guess it was noted that the governor was not part of the march. He was in his office behind closed doors at the time, but he did obviously welcome visitors.
Well, certainly, yeah. He welcomed a group of the leaders, Dr. King, Rob Abernathy, and so forth. But the governor, I think, had, as I understand some of the history, had played a role in providing all kinds of support to make the march occur, of course, in some security. He lent his other staff support to the march organizers to make sure that things were safe and that went along as planned.
Jim Embry is going to leave us because we have another guest joining us in a moment. Jim, why don't you give us the one-minute elevator speech about the film that's going to be showing this evening, Thursday evening at 6 o'clock. Of course, our show repeats on Sunday. So where will it be available after the Thursday evening showing?
Thank you, John. Yes, this evening from 6 to 8 at the Madison County Public Library, I'll be showing the film. It's called 8 Acres of History, produced by the Lexington Public Library, that describes the effort of our restoration committee to restore this historic cemetery that was begun by African Americans post the Civil War. In that documentary, we'll describe people who were buried at the cemetery, many individuals that myself, Sandra, and Naida stand on their shoulders. These were individuals who, post the Civil War, were engaged in questions of women's suffrage, civil rights, breaking down the barriers of then Jim Crow laws. So we honor those individuals that made our work and our positions now possible. But the film is available online on the Public Library website. It's on YouTube. And again, it's called 8 Acres of History, and I'll be describing as well some of my own family connections with Madison County and Berea College.
All right, Jim Embry, pleasure getting to know you. Thanks for being with
us. My pleasure. Thank you, John.
For this week's Eastern Standard. We will continue with Sandra Moore and welcome guest Naida Wigginton to the program. But first, we want to hear from Mr. Joe Graves. After experiences as a young man made him realize that segregation was what he called a cruel policy, Joe Graves began his lifelong involvement in the civil rights movement by helping get an African-American employee at his father's Lexington company, Graves Cox, promoted to a commissioned salesman, the first in the state. Graves was later involved in the desegregation of Lexington theaters as part of the Lexington Human Rights Committee. Throughout the years, Joe has held several political offices, often with emphases on civil rights, including terms in both the State House and the Senate in the 1970s. In 1964, Graves was co-chair of Kentuckians for Public Accommodations. He marched alongside scores at the Capitol. And Eastern Standard producer Richard Turner made a visit to Joe Graves last week. Joe Graves shared his recollections of the march.
Well, fortunately, the weather was nice, and as I was in the march, I would watch the faces of the people on the side of the street we were marching down. Some of them sort of encouraged us with smiles and facial expressions. Some were kind of noncommittal in terms of their facial expressions. But one of the most moving experiences I had that day, as I looked forward at the marchers in front of me, I noticed a black person whose head bobbed up and down, almost as if the person was jumping up and down. So I made a mental note that when the march stopped and we arrived at the Capitol in Frankfort, I was going to find out who that person was and see if I could figure out why the person was going up and down like that. And I did. And this was a young woman, probably of high school age, and she was terribly crippled. One of her legs was so distorted that she could not walk without bobbing up and down. And it touched me at the time, as it touches me to tell you the story, because I thought, you know, black people have taken a lot of kind of mental punishment from segregation. And here is a woman who came out to march, even though she was severely handicapped. It was very touching.
How do you feel that Kentucky has changed in the past 50 years, as far as civil rights is concerned? What changes have you seen?
I was so involved in the civil rights, about integration, about job opportunities, that I think the greatest challenge, or one of the greatest challenges we face as Americans, not just in Kentucky, is what I would describe as maybe economic justice. I think the gap between the middle class and the people in the 1% has widened and widened and widened. I think it's far more difficult now for people to move up from poverty to the middle class. I think we have some great challenges ahead of us, and I'm hopeful that our leaders, both in the private sector and in the elected office, really concentrate on that.
And what are your thoughts on this 50th anniversary commemorative march?
Richard, I think it is a good thing. In fact, my wife and I are going to that. I think it is good for us as Americans to realize that that was a challenge that we addressed, the challenge of segregation. And we addressed it because of great leaders like Martin Luther King and other great leaders who stimulated us all. So I think it's good to be reminded that we've had success, that when we work together, we can accomplish a lot. So I think it is important.
Joe Graves was at the 1964 March, March 5th, 1964, in Frankfort, Kentucky, sharing his recollections with WEKU producer Richard Turner. This is Eastern Standard. We invite you to be part of the show at 800-621-8890. With us in the studio, still Sandra Moore, Associate Provost for Diversity with Eastern Kentucky University. And joining us now is Naita Wiginton. Naita is chair of the communications team for the 50th anniversary March on Frankfort. Naita has also been involved with the Kentucky Civil Rights Hall of Fame Oral History Project, also with a nonprofit group, Whistle Work, formed with the goal of offering entertaining educational events for young people. Naita, thanks for being with us.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
How did you get involved in planning this 50th anniversary march?
I had the opportunity to work with Mr. John Johnson on the Oral History Project. And based on that and just an overall enthusiasm, he offered me the opportunity to join the team as a volunteer. Anyone who is out in the community who still wants to volunteer, those opportunities are readily available. We have places for you to place your time and your energy, even financial support. Just step in wherever you like. There are opportunities to volunteer, to be on the chant team, to be marshals, to assist in making sure that everyone has the materials they need. So don't hesitate. There's a space for everyone. This is a movement. Not one person leads it.
If I forget at the end of the show, I should have you mention now how people should get in touch if they want to volunteer or participate in the march.
Absolutely. They may call the Kentucky Commission on Human Rights. They may also visit the Facebook page for the march, which is the official 50th Anniversary March on Frankfort Facebook page. They may also reach out via a email address, which is the number 4, then the word media, M-E-D-I-A, March, M-A-R-C-H, at yahoo.com.
Naita Wiginton is chair of the communications team for the 50th anniversary March on Frankfort. Talk about communications. You're organizing media, trying to get media coverage and promotion. What kind of contacts have you had? Is the coverage going to be beyond Kentucky?
We believe it will be. We right now are talking to the national news media. Kentucky has always played a pivotal role in the country's view of civil rights. Civil rights is a continuum experience, and we've always had a role that has caused the nation to take account. So we have the national media that we are anticipating, hoping, and we are optimistic you'll reach out to them as well to say that they should be here. But we also are going to have the local and regional media that's going to be here, because we know that Kentucky's voice needs to be heard within its own members. So we have local newspapers and television stations, public affairs programs like yourself, which you're very appreciative of, that are getting the word out.
You're very young, and we're not there in 1964.
So
you were nowhere in 1964. There's little doubt about that. When and how did you learn about the 1964 march?
Civil rights is something that is taught in many different ways. One is through oral history, where families share their experiences, which is very important. We also learn it about in the classroom, and then we learn about it just by expressing interest and curiosity. So I had the privilege and the blessing of learning about it in all three ways.
Naida Wigginton here with us, as well as Sandra Moore, and we're interested in hearing from you during this week's Eastern Standard. We're going to take a short break here in just a few moments. We encourage you to tell your story of the 1964 March on Frankfort, or if you were in Washington in 1963, certainly tell us about that. Where were you in 1964? If you were around, how were you experiencing the civil rights movement and the efforts that were underway at that time? How did you perceive them? Of course, blacks, whites, people of all races were interested in your opinion, your views, how you experienced it from your point of view at that time, and how things have changed in Kentucky and beyond since 1964, 1963. The march on Frankfort in 64 was not the end of the struggle in Kentucky. We know that, and I'm sure our guests would agree that struggle has not ended yet. We're interested in hearing from you. Send us an email. WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. Send us a tweet at WEKUEST, or get on the line right now with your story, your question, your comment. 800-621-8890. Remembering the 1964 march on Frankfort, Kentucky, the state capital, March 5th, 1964, being commemorated this coming Wednesday with a march. And we are wondering if you experienced the 1964 march, if you intend to experience the 2014 march, and we are interested in your views on the civil rights and equality activities in the state of Kentucky. 800-621-8890. Send us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Naida Wigginton is chair of the communications team for this 50th anniversary march. We were talking about how you became involved in this year's commemorative march.
Yes, I shared that I had been invited to join the volunteer team, and I want to take this opportunity to tell anyone who's involved in the civil rights movement, whether they are a participant or a person in the community, I am optimistic that you'll do for others as Mr. Johnson and the members of the Allied Organization for Civil Rights did for me, and that's to offer them an opportunity to take an active role and an active part, not just on the March 5th event, but on other issues involving civil rights that are taking place in your community. It's a wonderful opportunity to have someone to share the torch with you. There are people out here who are just waiting for opportunities to know how their gifts and talents can be used for the betterment of our community. And if we can have each generation share, it offers a wonderful thing. One thing we hope you do share is bring your young people to the march on Wednesday, the 5th. We are hoping that young people, students will come. We are inviting student groups to come. We're asking you in advance to contact their school administrators to get a pre-approved school absence. Again, that's pre-approved, where you write a letter to the administrator, because this is an opportunity to learn about history firsthand. It's a part to be an opportunity to be engaged and not read it in a book.
Anticipating any problems with schools that may not authorize the or excuse the absence?
We are not. We have received support from the Kentucky Department of Education. They recognize it as an educational event. We have supplemental opportunities that are taking place. For example, example, the Capital City Museum is doing an exhibit that does a comparison of the 1963 March on Washington with the 1964 March on Frankfort. The Kentucky Historical Society is doing an event at the Governor's Mansion at the Education Center, which is a wonderful program called Kentucky Media Bank, where people can actually get on the computer and share their stories around civil rights, and then the teachers can also do it in the classroom. So this is a collective experience that many people have sewn into so that young people will be able to really experience the richness of this day.
Sounds like a lot of excitement in Frankfort on Wednesday. Any sense of the crowd that is expected to attend?
Thousands are coming.
Going to match the 10,000 of 64?
Well, you know what? I won't make that prediction. I'm going to hope that there will be at least 10,000. Maybe there will be more. Kentucky shows up. We show up for basketball games. I believe we'll show up for this. There's no way to estimate the amount of enthusiasm Kentuckians will give to an important event.
We shall see. There will be plenty of media coverage, and we'll be hearing more about this march as the week progresses, as we approach next Wednesday. Sandra Moore, Associate Provost for Diversity Planning with Eastern Kentucky University. We're hearing the details. You're involved to some extent in planning for this commemorative march, as well as year-round and for years on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University. I'm sure interacting with other institutions of higher education across the state. Where do we stand in terms of diversity, racism, human rights in Kentucky? I mean, one sad example is that there was apparently a racist poster on campus at Eastern some months ago, at least perceived as such. Tell us about that and where, you know, how you assess the current situation.
I think that with all institutions, we have a lot of things to be proud of, and then we also have areas that we need to improve upon. Eastern has been an institution that's been on the forefront of diversity initiatives and have been leaders not only in the state but regionally and nationally as well. And as we strive to enhance diversity, and when you were talking earlier to Mr. Embry, and I was thinking about some of the posters that you would see during 1964 and what they would have to say, and you would have heard a lot or seen a lot about civil rights, integration, equality, desegregation. And I think that in addition to all of that being present in this year's march, you'll also hear about Fairness Alliance. You'll hear about inclusiveness. You'll hear about diversity. And with that, that means that as we march together, just as everyone did back in 1964, to make a change and continue with the change and to do away with discrimination that does exist, does still exist in 2014, and how that we can work as a collective community to address these issues for all that are underrepresented or disenfranchised populations that exist.
Any issues or tensions when you talk about fairness, marriage equality, issues of that type? Many people object to some of these issues or some of the movements that have gone on in recent years for religious, personal, philosophical reasons. Any tensions within the community in terms of the planning for a march like this and that kind of activity and involvement?
None that I perceive. And I say that because whenever you talk about a university, we're a microcosm of the university, of the universe that we live in. And we also have an opportunity in education to educate the masses, to understand about the importance of inclusiveness and equal opportunities for all. And then as one race of people or underrepresented disenfranchised population moves along, it enhances the opportunities for others. Mr. Embry had talked about the fact that we stand on the shoulders of our ancestors. And that's a common term that's used in the Black community, African American community, because we know that we would not be sitting here before you right now if it had not been for our ancestors and what they had gone through in years that have gone by. And so as we move forward in 2014, that's something that's equally important, that as we talk about equality, it's equality for all. And I think that there's more excitement as opposed to pushback issues and concerns and excitement for the opportunity of everybody to march and participate collectively. And then the question that you had asked earlier about the participation of the legislation, because this is the year for the longer term for the legislators to be in the General Assembly. So in addition to the march, is the march to the Capitol with the rally that's taking place, and also sessions on how to lobby and how to interact with the legislators. And I perceive that the legislators will be marching for those that will be able to participate as well, too, in the march.
In 64, we're told that the 1966 Kentucky Civil Rights Act was perhaps based on, or at least influenced by, the 1964 march. Anything on the agenda? Is there one issue, one item that those involved in this commemorative march would like to ask of the governor and the General Assembly?
Some of the things that I read from Mr. Johnson, who's the executive director of the Commission on Human Rights, it's about House Bill 70, which is the opportunity for felons to vote once they're released, and that they have served their time and they have done the things that they need to do.
That did get passed by a committee. Has it been approved by the House?
It was through the House and the Senate, and the added caveat, or maybe if there's a concern with what was approved, it was the added stipulation that there should be a 5-year wait time.
Oh, yeah.
And so once an individual has served their time as a felon, the thought process is that they should reinstitute their civil rights immediately after release. And so that's going to be one of the major focal points and talking points that I know that will take place.
And there's a serious inequality. There are a lot of African Americans are among those who are, as a result, denied their voting rights.
Definitely. Definitely.
It's actually an issue that affects Kentuckians overall. 1 in 17 Kentuckians does not have the right to vote because of that issue. So it is a major challenge to all communities of all racial and economic backgrounds. We are 1 in 3 states that does not allow for the restoration of voting rights for ex-felony offenders. It is a legal issue that continues to get national attention. A bill like House Bill 70 has come out of the House several times, but has never made it out of committee in the Senate. So the goal is that it makes it out of committee in the Senate, and of course the goal is that it gets passed. And it's interesting how that compares to the 1964 march, because the Public Accommodations Bill did not get out of committee in 1964, but we were blessed that in 1966 a greater legislation was passed, the Kentucky Civil Rights Act, which became the first of its kind in a state south of the Mason-Dixie line. So as Ms. Moore mentioned, there is going to be lobbying, and that lobbying is going to take place directly after the march. That lobbying should begin around 12:30, and it will last until approximately 1:30, after which time participants are invited to go to a William McNulty forum, and that forum is being moderated by Renee Shaw from KET. The purpose of that forum is to discuss the role of African Americans in politics, and then the future of politics in Kentucky overall, because we know that it is through our elected officials that communities have their voices heard when it comes to legislations and policies. And we're excited that on this day we will have with us Senator Georgia Davis Powers, who was the first African American female in the state Senate of Kentucky, as well as the first African American in general in the state Senate of Kentucky. And she was very actively involved in public accommodations and in making sure that those who participated in the 1964 March on Frankfort had an audience with the governor. So as Ms. Moore and Mr. Embry were saying, there are many issues to be discussed. The housing, fair housing is a continued issue in Kentucky that gets a lot of attention, as well as the needs of those who have physical and mental disabilities. So those will be issues that are in our atmosphere regularly. But the 1 in 17 individuals who do not have the right to vote, who do not have a direct process, is right now considered by the members who are part of the Allied Organization for Civil Rights, which is the host organization, as being the primary voting issue of concern.
So a lot of issues on the agenda, including that one. 800-621-8890 is the phone number. This is Eastern Standard. Our program is an interactive program. Shall we talk to Bob from Berea, if Bob is still on the line? Are you there, Bob?
Yes, this is Bob.
Go right ahead.
Yes. I worked back in the late 60s in organizing in Kentucky, and Ellen Wiginton became the chairman of the board of the Kentucky Poor People's Coalition. And I just wondered if your guest today is related to Ellen.
I am. She is my grandmother. Thank you for bringing her memory up. I loved her dearly.
Well, listen, my conversation would be too long if you would call me at my home.
It would be my pleasure.
I would love to talk to you.
All right,
about your grandmother.
Thank you.
Bob, okay. Thank you so much.
Do you have a number?
If you can contact me at the email address for MediaMarch@yahoo.com. Again, that's the number 4, the word media, M-E-D-I-A, March, M-A-R-C-H, at yahoo.com. And she was the first director of the Kentucky Poor People's Coalition, which was actively involved in marches in Kentucky.
Bob, thank you so much for calling and being part of today's Eastern Standard, connecting people here on our interactive program. 800-621-8890. A question, a comment, a story about your involvement in the 1964 march or about civil rights and diversity in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. Again, 800-621-8890. We encourage you to continue dialogue on our Facebook page as well, the WEKU page. Send us a tweet at WEKUEST. So, some issues out there, the House Bill 70 on the agenda. What else do we need to do in terms of our universities and the and your job, Sandra Moore, on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University? What else remains in terms of, you know, I guess you would hope that your job would go away someday, would it? Would you not?
Technically, that's what, when I started here in 1988, that was my goal and objective, was to... There would no longer need be the need at that time for a director of minority affairs.
Why has that need continued?
Well, the actuality of life is because we put in the human component, and you talk about the element of change, and when you talk about equal opportunity and equality and desegregation and integration, those are not easy matches just to take place. You have to have someone that'll shepherd or oversight and involve other individuals to make that happen. And just like when we talk about the fact that Miss Georgia Powers was the first senator, African-American female senator, then followed by Gerald Neal, that fills that seat, and was the only black senator at the time. And it's only been since the election in 2013, 2014, with Reggie Thomas coming in from Lexington, that we have two black senators that are part of the General Assembly. And so with that, you see time, there is progress, but it's incremental changes. And that if we're going to change, and if we're talking about changing the masses, that's why there's a need for the diversity office at Eastern Kentucky University, as well as that the equal opportunity office that take place throughout the Commonwealth of Kentucky at all institutions. And then whether it's legislation, whether it's court rulings, there's still that need to address inequality. And so education is the key, and we have the opportunity for teachable moments within institutions of higher education at Eastern Kentucky University. But we're trying to move the masses, and that takes time and a concerted effort by all to make that happen.
Naida Wigginton, we've acknowledged, again, you're part of a younger generation. Your grandmother was involved in issues and, I guess, civil rights activities years ago. How do you perceive others in your generation in terms of their awareness of this history? Are they aware of the struggles that went on and how much work was involved?
I think each generation has a difference of awareness. We can learn information, but it's different to experience it. So my generation's experiences are different from those of Ms. Moore and Mr. Embry, as are the generations of my nephew and niece. What's important to do is to show them the continuum of experiences and how to make the most of their time and their talents and the opportunities in their day. So for example, in this current generation, people are sharing information on Facebook. They are making sure that pictures and images are going out to one another. There are conversations that you're seeing that are taking place in social media about the events and the awareness. And there is a general desire to know more about what they should know more about. Let me know what piece is missing from my experience and from my understanding. And that can only be given through elders. I am optimistic that the experiences of racial discrimination and segregation that my parents felt and that my grandparents felt and those before them will never be experienced by me or the generation behind me. In order for that to be a reality, it's important that we continue to be alert and advocates.
We're about out of time, so let me get from you again contact information related to the march on Frankfurt next Wednesday.
The march lineup is going to begin at 9:30 a.m. That lineup takes place at 2nd Street and Capitol. You'll want to be there with your organizations. We invite you to bring posters of issues that are important to you, as well as of individuals whose memories you want to be.
No reservations required? Just
no
show up?
No reservations required. You can contact, though, the Kentucky Commission on Human Rights to give them a heads up that you're going. We do ask if you're bringing a school or youth group to call. And the march begins at 10. The rally begins at 11. And lobbying starts at 12:30.
Let's get the email and phone number again very briefly.
The email is the number 4media, M-E-D-I-A, March, M-A-R-C-H, at yahoo.com.
Sandra Moore, how do folks get in touch with you to follow up in these last few seconds?
They contact the University Diversity Office, Eastern Kentucky University, 859-622-6587.
622-6587. Sandra Moore. Naita Wigginton, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Jim Embry for being with us, and also to Joe Graves. Eastern Standard is a production of the WEKU stations at Eastern Kentucky University. Associate producers Andrew Moorhead, Richard Turner, Logan Riley. On the phones, Julie Tennell. At the controls, Joni's Franklin. Thanks for tuning in to Eastern Standard on WEKU.